Hi, my name is Juliet, and I'm the host for this podcast. I will be ordained as a rabbi this coming January, and one of the things I love about being a rabbi is connecting the Torah reading with contemporary life. In Judaism, there's a specific portion, we call it a parsha, every week of the year, and as we go through these readings week by week, in order from the beginning of the Torah to the end, from the beginning of the Jewish year to the end, we analyze the stories and we comment on them. And we are actually coming to the end of the Jewish year. Rosh Hashanah is on Monday, so starting Sunday night. So that's the Jewish New Year. And I will be connecting Rosh Hashanah with that's what I'll be talking about today, partially. We connect these stories to contemporary life, and then we bring these the ancient stories alive. And I hope you will accompany me as I tell these stories of Torah and of my life and the lives of others. And if you miss an episode, you can always go back and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for coming on this ancient and contemporary journey with me. You can visit my website. There's a link. You can find the link on the podcast to lenegditami.us to learn more about me and my journey through Judaism. I'm available to lead services, chanting circles for weddings, funerals, b'nai mitzvahs, and your donations, of course, are always much appreciated to support this work. So on to today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about tears of gratitude and nitzavim. So something happened this week that brought tears of gratitude to my eyes. As I said, I'm going to be ordained in January, and we've been having these weekly meetings where we're figuring out how we're going to have our graduation ceremony, and we have a new dean at the Aleph Ordination Program. You can look that up, Aleph Ordination Program. That's the Organization for Jewish Renewal Clergy. So we have a new dean, Rabbi Darren Kleinberg, and he was talking about inclusiveness in Judaism. Rabbi Darren told us that he'd been publicly disowned, those are his words, by the Orthodox institution that ordained him. That was a while ago, back in 2007. And the problem was that he had participated in a Beit Din, that's a group of rabbis or clergy that get together to make a rabbinic ruling, and they do this for conversions and stuff like that. That's one of the things they do it for. And this happened to be for a child that was being converted, an adopted child. And the problem was that he chose to participate on this Beit Din without the correct, in quotes, kind of people that his Orthodox institution would approve of. They were not Orthodox and they were not all male. So that's a problem in Orthodoxy. Orthodox institutions do not recognize females as rabbis. Although there are a couple of places that are doing that now, that consider themselves halachic or Orthodox. Anyway, so his didn't. And he was talking about how many people have been hurt by Judaism's rules around who can be considered a Jew and who can't. And this was a conversion for a child. Big deal that if it wasn't all Orthodox people, then you can't recognize this child as Jewish. And I can tell you two very close examples in my life of people who have been hurt by the rules around who can be considered a Jew and who can't. And one is my husband, who has passionately embraced Judaism since we were married 34 years ago. And though he feels Jewish, certain barriers he cannot overcome would make many say that he's not a real Jew, quote unquote, real Jew. Very problematic term. And though I've argued and protested and defended his right to be considered Jewish, in spite of these hoops that he hasn't been able to jump through, or these barriers that he hasn't been able to overcome. And I even wrote about it, and you can look on my website. I have a page called, at this point, it's called Academic Writings. I wrote about it there. So if you want to know the details, please go ahead. It's long. It's a long paper. You can skip whatever is, you know, inaccessible. Anyway, even though I have argued and protested and defended my husband's right to be recognized as Jewish, I sadly participated in passing on some of the hurtful ideas that I had inherited about who would, I want to say, quote unquote, pass the Jewish test. And it's ironic because I got this from my own Jewish atheist parents who taught me, you know, oh, well, if a person converts, oh, they're not really Jewish. I remember hearing that growing up. You've heard that, right? Or, you know, then there's this idea of not being Jewish enough. And so it goes on and on and on. And I've told my husband, I mean, I'm really, really sorry. I apologized to him again the other day. And because I do consider him Jewish, I do think of him as Jewish now. And another example is my nephew, who was born to a Jewish father, that's my brother, and a non-Jewish mother. And he recently was on a birthright trip to Israel with his Jewish girlfriend. And according to them, him and his girlfriend, my nephew was the only participant in the entire cohort who was endlessly asking questions full of curiosity around Judaism, which he knows so little about but wants so much to learn. And the leaders of his group told him that he isn't Jewish because his mother isn't. And he was so upset. He was so hurt. And he couldn't stop talking about it. Like, how could birthright, of all places, that's supposed to be welcoming Jews and making them want to move to Israel, like, of all, you know, of all people, how would they have a leader who would make him feel like he wasn't good enough? And maybe their idea would have been, well, you have to convert. But my brother's reaction was, what would the Nazis say? And my reaction, well, you know the answer to that, right? And my reaction was, not according to the Bible, because patrilineal descent is all there is in Torah. So here's what made me cry, getting back to that. While acknowledging the significance of rituals of transition, which might be a matter of personal choice when a person wants to transition convert. Dean Darren of my seminary said that he was not interested in making people jump through hoops to become Jewish. If they feel Jewish and want to participate in Jewish ritual and community, that's good enough for him. And that made me cry. It really did, to hear that from my institution. Like, finally to hear, because I've heard a lot of things over the years that have, even in Jewish renewal, that haven't always made me, well, even my husband had to, you know, it was a problem at our shul. And it's been a real source of pain over the years. And then the dean went on to tell us of a recent scandal. I don't know if it's a scandal. I think so. I mean, it's become scandalous. Of this German cantor in Germany who spoke about the problem of the, quote, problem of too many converts to Judaism. You can look that up too. Just Google German cantor in Germany, problem of too many converts, and you'll find it. Then I heard a podcast episode on identity crisis. Great podcast. It's from the Hartman, Shalom Hartman Institute. You can look that up. And this episode was called Yeshiva versus Pride. It just came on September 12th or something like that. And in it, it tells how Yeshiva University sued the Supreme Court in order to refuse to acknowledge an LGBTQ club for their students. And the people on the podcast were talking about reparative therapy, which is a kind of therapy which is supposed to, quote unquote, cure queer people of their, what they define as a mental disorder. And modern orthodoxy has been forced to recognize its utter failure. They no longer require it. And they've also been forced to face the fact that queer people are not going away as a result. It can't be cured. As much as they would wish that these people would just go away and disappear. So talk about being unwelcoming. right? I mean, this is, and it's not just a problem in, even though there are denominations that recognize and welcome gay people, queer people, it's still an issue in so many places. So listen to the podcast, Identity Crisis. It's great. Yeshiva versus Pride. You'll hear all about it. Stuff that I'm not going to go into here. That's for them. It's a great one. Go listen to it. So I want to talk about the name of my website, which is lenegditamid.us. And I took the phrase lenegditamid from Psalm 16 and the famous line, Shiviti Adonai lenegditamid. I set God, which for me, I translate as the sacred, before me continually, over and over again. That's what Tamid means. It's often translated Tamid is like, you know, something, a light that never goes out, a flame that never goes out, right? But it doesn't mean continual. It means over and over again. It means every day. It goes on. Okay. So, did I explain that well? I don't know. Anyway, I chose this name because it is the intention of setting the sacred before me continually, with which I want to live. I want to commit over and over to living a holy life. You can ask, what does it mean to commit over and over, and what is a holy life? Well, let's start with inclusivity. When I was looking for a website domain, I found that .com was already taken, but .us was available. And my daughter, who was helping me, the one who just got married, the older one, she said, perfect, mommy. She said, us includes everyone. And isn't that what you're all about? So I was like, yes, that's great. So I took .us. Now, in terms of this week's Parsha, it begins with Moses telling the people that as they stand, nitzavim, that means they stand before God today, they are about to cross over or into God's covenant. And it says, with all those who dwell among them, the stranger, the foreigner, the outsider, anybody, everybody included. It's not just the Israelites. And this is stated throughout the Torah again and again, that we are in covenant with God. Yet time and time again, God expresses immense disappointment with God's people, flaring with anger, threatening to destroy them or cut them off. Many instances in Torah, God does, in fact, kill thousands of God's own people, right? God claims that this is my people. You're my people. God's own people. And he kills them, thousands of them. And time and again, God is convinced by Moses to calm down, give the people another chance to try again. Give them another chance to try again, and let's just try again. Still, God's covenant is conditional, and the stipulations are enumerated throughout the Torah, as we know, all the commandments. Do this, don't do that. And it says in Nitzavim, if we should think it too baffling to fulfill these stipulations, these commandments, if it seems like too much of a wonder, the word baffling, it's translated as baffling, but the word is actually niflet, which is like wonder, like it's just too amazing. It's beyond our reach, out of reach. No, it says in Nitzavim, it is not in the heavens. It's not across the sea. It is right here in front of us, in our mouth and in our heart. The continuing frustration is clear. Why do we make this so difficult? Still, if we can manage to fulfill the commandments, then God will restore or return our fortunes to us. Literally, that which we have captured, and return the compassion and love God has for us, which implies that God's taken away God's love from us, right? And God will gather us again, all together again. And this is another part I don't like, from the other peoples among whom we have been scattered. In Hebrew, it's V'shav Adonai Elohecha et Shivuatecha V'richamecha V'shav V'kibetecha, gather you together, mi kol ha'amim, from all the peoples, asher hafitzecha, that you've been scattered, Adonai Elohecha Shama, that God has gathered you there. I mean, scattered you over there. So in this one phrase, the Hebrew word return, also meaning again, shav, is used in each instance over and over again. Vishav, 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 vishav. He'll return his love and he'll return your, you know, and return the stuff, your riches. There's so many reasons people give for leaving organized religion and for leaving Judaism or for not joining a Jewish community. And among these are feeling unwelcome, the idea of chosenness or being special, singled out from the rest of the world. I don't like that. I don't feel comfortable with that idea. And also because of this violent, punishing God that we have, and the idea that God can take God's love away from us. This conditionality. We're taught that God's love is unconditional, but boy, is it conditional in the Torah. And I agree with all the reasons why people leave or don't come back or whatever. I agree with them. And I didn't participate in Judaism for many years as a result. All my years growing up, these are the things that I was told. And I was like, oh yeah, this is awful. But I had an experience and I chose to come to it. I didn't come back to it because I had never left. I had never been given a chance to be a part of it as a child, which maybe made it easier in some ways because I didn't come with all that baggage that made my parents and my grandparents leave. The Torah is an ancient book for which I make no excuses. Yet, it also reflects our present-day society in ways that many of us would like to deny. Like when we hear politicians say, that's not us. Haven't we heard that a lot, right? That's not us. Well, it is us because we just did that thing. And though I reject many, many parts of it, many parts of Judaism, many parts of the prayer book, many parts of the Torah, it sadly does reflect a world that we still struggle with and in. We still struggle with this world and in this world. But Judaism is my heritage and I choose to play an active role in it and argue and fight to defend those who are excluded or feel excluded. Because there's so many messages that need to be heard from Torah. Like, and from our prayer books even, like that we are the ones that need to do the deep spiritual work of being able to see other human beings as equally sacred. We're told this again and again. Not some deity that we don't see. We're supposed to do it. We're supposed to do that work. No one can do it for us. And we're to do it in our hearts and with our mouths, which means seeing others through our hearts with love and speaking in ways that bring peace and welcome other people. It's not easy work. We don't make it hard. It just is, because we're human. So we need to keep coming back over and over again. We need to come back over and over again. There's that word again, return. The word return, teshuvah, is an important part of the High Holy Days. This is the big time of year to examine ourselves and return to God, to recommit to living a holy and sacred life. So as we approach Rosh Hashanah in just a few days, at a time when so many people are being told that they are not welcome in our country and in our communities, let us enter this holiday with the commitment to commit over and over to live a holy life, setting the sacred before us every day, seeing each human being as sacred, opening our hearts to love and taking actions that show that all are welcome, as is commanded in the Torah. And I want to wish you a Shana Tova and a good Shabbos. And thank you for being with me here today. And see you next week.